Bilbo has a claim on the treasure because he has a contract. And so what you have is a standoff with the men and the elves outside the Lonely Mountain and the dwarves barricaded inside and both sides wanting the treasure and both sides partially right. The dwarves were right to say, why should we give you any treasure? You wouldn't have given it to us if you had gotten it first. The men and elves are right to say, some of this treasure belonged to our ancestors, and furthermore, we helped you when you had nothing. And so there's an impasse, which Bilbo wants to solve before it comes to open war. So he steals the Arkenstone, which he has found, and gives it to the lake men and the elves so that they can exchange it for a portion of the treasure. I always had trouble with this as a child, because why would Bilbo betray his friends? But his point is he wants there to be no open war. And so he's concerned more about peace than he is about his friends, and he sees that there's truth on both sides. Well, this is still going to come to open war anyway, because Thorin's relatives, the dwarves, have come marching up and are about to attack, and there's going to be a war, when Gandalf says, stand and wait. And the goblins and the wargs have heard about the death of the dragon and have come up on their own to steal the treasure. So the aristocracy is dead, and the laborers are coming to get their fair share of the spoils. Okay, again, we can push that analysis too far. Because the goblins and the wargs show up, it shows the value of having orcs or goblins, because it makes the good guys all fight on the same side instead of fight against each other. And there's a large battle. The goblins are defeated, and sadly, Thorin receives his mortal wound. And this is the section of The Hobbit that makes it so unlike a children's book, because Bilbo goes in and has final words with Thorin as he dies. And I have to admit that when I read The Hobbit, my own daughter, I get all missed at this particular scene when Bilbo and Thorin are saying goodbye to each other, and Thorin says, I go now to join my fathers. If only more people valued food and drink instead of hoarded gold, it would be a happier world. And then Thorin dies. Again, very unusual for a children's book, and setting the stage for evolving into The Lord of the Rings. Then, after the first climax of killing the dragon, and after the second climax of defeating the goblins, Tolkien does something else very unusual. He has quite a long epilogue, as it were, it's still part of the story, where he takes Bilbo all the way back to the Shire, even though the journey is not particularly interesting. And by doing this, by bringing things back full circle, Tolkien sets the stage for what he's going to do in The Lord of the Rings also, the there and back again. And it's something that separates out The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings from all their imitators. It's very risky because that ending portion is not very exciting. It doesn't go out on a high note. In fact, the last lines of The Hobbit are, and he reached for the tobacco jar. And right before that, Gandalf tells Bilbo, you really are only a very little person after all. Bilbo says, thank goodness for that. So what Tolkien does is then undercut the whole heroic, romantic, we killed the dragon fantasy to make it much more about Bilbo has grown up in some way, and he's returned home a better person than he was before. This is exemplified at the very end when Bilbo says to his old friend Balin, Balin says, whenever our halls are made fair again, you should join us in them. And Bilbo says, if you're ever passing by, tea is at 2 o'clock, but stop by any time. And the point is, both of those characters are saying exactly the same thing, but one is speaking from the middle-class bourgeois point of view, and one is speaking from the heroic point of view, and now these two points of views can understand each other. That's what Bilbo's done. He's bridged that gap by gaining the respect of the dwarves and learning to respect them also, and learning to respect the heroic world and to love the heroic world. This psychological journey is far more interesting than a hero like Conan the Barbarian who just smashes everything in his path. And it also, by mediating between the bourgeois world of the readers and the heroic world, gave Tolkien a way to work in all of his fantasy material, all of his legendarium that he'd been building up that he hadn't been able to work on before. And so when he sits down to write the sequel to The Hobbit that his publishers wanted, which he originally gave them the Silmarillion, which didn't go over very well, when he sits down to write The Lord of the Rings, he has a technique for working with the material he wants to work with and making it understandable and palatable to his readers. And in so doing, in blending those two things together, he creates the greatest work of fantasy of the 20th century, which will be the focus of our next lecture.
This ends Lecture 4. Remember to visit this course's webpage at www.modernscholar.com, where you'll find additional information about the lectures you just heard.